This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
It's Wednesday. Good afternoon and welcome to the Pulse here on Joy News. Joy News, independent, fearless, and credible. And coming up this afternoon, Ghana power crisis shows no sign of abating as a new leaked GRIDCO report to government reveals they will still not be able to meet the country's power requirement despite President Akufo-Addo's directive for the curtailment of power to neighboring countries.
Who wanted to bring it? If there is, I haven't seen any timetable.
So when my people are calling for it,
they bring a timetable. What do you mean? The ECG says that there is no timetable coming. Why do you want to bring a timetable? What purpose?
And this afternoon, we have exclusive details of what has caused the erratic power supply to your home. Also, if you plan to apply for a Ghanaian passport this year, the earliest you can receive that passport will be 2026. That's a fresh revelation as the passport office begins to deal with over 70,000 backlog following the introduction of new fees.
Things start getting out of control as it is going, deteriorating, and we don't arrest it. It is going to take about 2 years for somebody to get their passport. As we speak, we have 70,000 sitting there backlog.
And later we hear a broadcaster's recount of how drugs ended his career in the latest Joy News documentary, Creative Addiction.
His job. It got to a point in time, despite says no, it seems this guy has lost it. Has lost focus. And apparently I was relieved of my duties.
Plus, we also take you to Germany, where cannabis for personal use has become legal this week. How are African countries cultivating it, cashing in? We find out when DW's Arthur Sullivan joins us from our partners, DW in Berlin. The Pulse is brought to you by Global Community Zigilu, affordable, safe sanitation for all. We are live on DSTV channel 421 and GoTV 125. You can follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and myjoyonline.com. For these and more, my name is Elton Robbie. My name is Elton Brobe, and this is the Pulse here on Joy News. Now, if we were hopeful that the current power crisis was about to end following President Akufo-Addo's directive for the curtailment of export to neighboring countries, take a deep breath and rethink. This is because fresh details obtained by Joy News from a leaked situational report prepared by GRIDCO, that's Ghana Grid Company, for government shows the country will still not be able to meet our power requirement to keep the lights on, even if VRA curtails the sale of power to Togo and other neighboring countries. Shortly, we'll be joined by spokesperson for the Energy Ministry as we explore solutions to the crisis following a meeting of West African countries over the power crisis in the sub-region. With us this afternoon is also Nana Amuesi, the 7th Executive Director at the Institute of Energy Security, IES, We also have former Power Minister Dr. Kwabena Donkor joining us for this conversation. First, though, let's get the details of the information we have picked. And of course, Joy News' editor, Evans Mensam, will join me to take us through the leaked documents that we've chanced upon here at Joy News. And Evans Mensam will take us through all these issues shortly. But what you are seeing on the screen is the information that we have. So total installed generating capacity is 5,626. And of course, total available capacity as of March 26, 2024, from the installed capacity of 6,226 is 3,225, and that will give you a deficit of 2,375. This is information we have, you know, intercepted, if you like, from our sources at the Ghana Grid Company, that's GridCo, on the power situation in Ghana at the moment. And this document, my colleague Evans Mensah is already in the studio. We're going to go through this document for you and also explore the ramification of this latest development in the power sector with players in the industry. Former Power Minister, was also Member of Parliament for Pru East in the Bono East Region, Kwabena Donkor, Dr. Kwabena Donkor, and of course, watchers of the industry. All right, so let me bring in Evans Mensah. So Evans, you're welcome to the Pulse.
Yeah, thank you very much, Elting.
So these details that we are getting, can you provide the timelines within which this was presented to the presidency?
And as our audience can see on the screen, this is a document that GridCo had prepared. Mm. And they've been asked to do so. This was over the period, over the Easter period. Mm. So as you see there, the covering the 27th to the 2nd of April. So this is just as of yesterday.
Right.
So it's the most up-to-date document as far as the energy sector is concerned and what is happening. It gives you a good picture of the problem.
And is there a reason why this was prepared?
If you read it, the officials who govern the sector, the energy ministry and the government itself, wanted to understand what's going to happen during that period of Easter period. And as you know, Easter, we are all home. People will need the electricity to sort of make sure that, you know, the festivities are properly enjoyed. You do not want a doomsday situation during Easter because people are home. When you put on the light during Easter, people will know. So government wanted to see what the situation is, and then they can put in place measures in the interim to manage the situation. In fact, what I know from my sources at GridCo is that over the Easter period, there was a very deliberate attempt
to keep the lights on.
Mm. And I was told very clearly, in clear terms, that right after Easter, we are going to revert to the doomsday situation that we've been facing, which indeed, if you've been monitoring, you would have noticed that your power is going off.
Of course, yesterday in my area from the morning to around 11 p.m.
And this document tells the story of why it's happening, and it's been happening over the last few weeks. Mm. And the opening paragraph is important. Right? And it's titled The Report on the Ghana Power System Supply Situation and Outlook between that period, 27 March to April 2nd. And you have the numbers on your screen.
Right.
So if you look at that deficit, it's a huge deficit of 2,375. It is according to this particular document.
Almost half of our installed capacity.
Exactly. It breaks this down even further, right? To the point where it gets to the actual shortfall, the generation shortfall, or 510 megawatts that we need to bridge. Mm-hmm. But primarily, and just to summarize, the GridCo's point in this particular document is that we don't have enough fuel to power all the plants that we have. And that the solution is that the government must go to Nigeria and negotiate for more gas for us. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as it gets, right? But let me read what they say at the beginning. It says The Ghana power system experienced challenges of inadequate generation. Mm-hmm. So again, there's the debate about what
really the issue is.
Is it a maintenance issue or is it a generation issue?
Because ECG had given us
some
explanation regarding the fact that they are not taking some maintenance, and that was the reason why we're experiencing the power, you know, crisis, if you like.
Yes, but GridCo is very clear that resulting from inadequate generation, resulting in load curtailment to the market, including thermal customers over the past week, there was also a system disturbance. And this was a very specific period.
Right.
This was on Tuesday, March 19th, at a very specific time. and resulted in an explosion. But it was a very specific time. Mm-hmm. The overarching problem is the generation challenge. Mm-hmm. And again, this resulted in forced outages in areas. But it says peak demand to date is 3,680 megawatts. And this is when we were just around the December.
Right.
The very specific, we experienced this peak demand, the highest demand we've had so far on December 11, 2023. And it goes on to talk about the transmission, right? The transmission lines, for example, from Konongo to Kumasi, and then availability. But the breakdown is interesting, right, Elting? The generation breakdown. It says the total installed capacity in Ghana, as we know, we've been talking about that, it's on the screen, is 5,626 megawatts. But the total available capacity is what you see on your screen again, which is the 3,250. That is the difference there, which is what you see at 2,375, which is here on your screen. So that is a challenge. That's the first challenge that Greco is noticing. But then they also have a table that breaks down the details of the unavailable units that we currently have. And there are a lot of them that are unavailable. Mm-hmm. So you have the Ameri plant, right, which was unavailable as of the 31st of January 2021. It's not available.
2021?
Yes.
Almost four.
Yes,
yes. 3 years.
That's 250 megawatts mm-hmm. unavailable. And the reason for its unavailability, they state, is that plant has been relocated, as we know.
To Asante region.
Exactly. And pre-commissioning has begun at the plant, but it's not delivering power for us. Then you have Siemens, units 1, 2, 3, all the way to 8, not available. That's 80 megawatts not available. Tico, unit 1, as of 15 January, isn't available as we speak. That's 110 megawatts. You have the Twin City plant, 200 megawatts not available. The Bui unit, number 300, mm-hmm. not available. The subtotal there is 740.
Not 740
not available. But then there's another table that is interesting. Units unavailable due to inadequate fuel. That's where the challenge had been.
The plant is there.
Yes.
But we don't have fuel to power them.
Exactly. You don't have fuel. According to the Greco document, it mentions Senate. Okay. 110. Mm. So it's there. It can power, but there's no fuel. 110 megawatts unavailable. Asogli phase one. Mm-hmm. That too, 180.
No fuel.
No fuel for it. KTPP units. As of 7th March 2024, 105 megawatts. This is inadequate DFO stock. And, of course, our experts will join us to tell us that's a particular kind of fuel that requires to run. It's not available. The AXA units, again, 200 megawatts. Inadequate HFO stock, causing it to be unavailable. It can supply electricity.
Right.
The subtotal there is 595 megawatts.
So if you put that one and the 800 together, that's over 1,000.
That's 1,000 in all. And then you have units unavailable due to fault. Mm-hmm. So we also have units that are faulty now.
Yes.
And that is just one. Tico unit number 3. Okay? It's not available.
Right.
It has been unavailable since 13th December. Unavailable, mm-hmm. right? Defective turbine blades. If you add all this together, you're talking about 1,455 megawatts.
Unavailable.
Yes.
And this is supposed to be part of the installed capacity.
Yes, that we have. Mm-hmm. But the part that they emphasize is the plants that are available,
but
no fuel.
Yes, and that's the responsibility of government.
But let me tell you that what they say about the gas supply, which, again, gives us a good picture of the situation right now. It says gas supply from domestic sources, that is ENI and TALO, have been relatively stable. And many people say, but we have gas.
Of course.
So why are we struggling with gas?
Ghana gas is supposed to be playing this role.
Exactly. According to the this document that was prepared by Greco, it's stable from ENI and from TALO, stable over the past week. And this was during the period, right? There was, however, trips on the Nigeria supply, including a trip on the WAPCO line. Okay, at RMS on March 23, to be very, very specific, at 3:42, resulting in the shutdown of all plants in Tema. Now, the total gas supply continues to be inadequate, and this is the part. Mm-hmm. The total gas supply continues to be inadequate to run Tema plants to meet electricity demand. VRA has, however, increased their gas nomination from Nigeria to the firm. Capacity of 80,000 MMBTU.
Right.
That's what they've increased it. But it's still not enough. Mm-hmm. And This is Adam Ponapa and Elting. He says, loan reduction exports. And I've seen that Kamala Dongo has...
It has become a conversation now.
So we've reduced our load and our export. Loan reduction exports to Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, and Togo, together with some internal local curtailment, are carried out to balance demand with the available generation. So we're having to curtail our exports.
Even before the presidential narrative, this was already being done.
But I want to read the conclusion, which is what they believe to be the solution. And they conclude that there is the need to source for more gas from Nigeria above the VRA firm contract. The contract that you have now in Nigeria. Greenco is suggesting and recommending to the government and authorities that get us more gas from Nigeria beyond the contract that you currently have with them.
Okay.
Okay. To run the idle plants. Because, as I said, they are idle plants.
Yes. The ones
100
like,
megawatts, over 500 megawatts of capacity that we need that are currently idle because we don't have gas. Right. Greenco says, get more gas from Nigeria to power these idle plants to meet the increasing electricity demand. In addition, alternate fuel must always be made available to AXA and KTPP to serve as strategic stock in the absence of gas to ensure reliable electricity supply. So, when you read this document, you are left with no doubt
that this is the situation.
This is the situation.
And so it's surprising that at some point we were made to understand that the situation had to do more with maintenance and the fact that the plant went off.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Unannounced, and that was the reason why we're faced with the power outages. Now, it is becoming clearer that our inability to buy fuel or gas is what is responsible for what we are experiencing.
Yeah, because even if the plants go down, I mean, Greenco's document is clear, even if the plants goes down and you have this 500 megawatts plus plants that are there ready to go and you have fuel, you are in a position to still provide electricity whilst you fix the other ones, right? That is why his recommendation is that provide the additional fuel, the alternative fuel,
right,
to run the KKTP plants and etc., because that can then give you the alternative power supply. But the second document...
I just wanted to find, because my understanding is that ECG may also not be acting right in terms of ensuring that the machines that give us power are not compromised.
And you're right, Elting. There's another document that the Greenco had written. This is dated the 28th March to the energy minister. And complaining that ECG is not complying with load management instructions. And they want to summarize this. Greenco says, because of the challenges we have just enumerated, where you don't have enough gas, so you don't have enough power available to distribute, they tell ECG to curtail power, manage the load. Doomsaw
exactly.
Is there, right? Put the lights off. According to the Greenco document and the complaint to the minister, ECG is not doing that. To the point where sometimes they are forced to unplug the power themselves. Don't take my word for it. I want to read it. And they say that we note with grave concern the repeated instances where Electricity Company of Ghana operations personnel failed to follow load management instructions issued by the SCC, and that is the System Control Center. Now, this non-compliance poses a significant threat to the stability of the power grid, potentially leading to available power outages to customers, and this is the part that would cause a bit of havoc. System collapse. That we tell you, we don't have enough power to give you. So manage your load at your end.
All right.
But the complaint is that the ECG personnel aren't doing that, threatening this. And they go on to talk about the fact that the system control center routinely communicates with the management directive, management directives to the ECG operation,
right,
telling them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, these instructions are often either not effected,
mm-hmm,
or inadequately implemented.
Right.
Okay. And this results in declining system frequency, triggering, and this is important, the operation of the automatic frequency load shedding,
mm-hmm,
relays, and then two, the system control center having to disconnect feeders serving ball customers to connect the decaying frequency. So that is a complaint we filed to the minister.
Evans, is there a response from government regarding the recommendations provided by GRIDCO?
Yeah. No, I haven't seen that yet. And they went ahead to actually provide specific instances,
mm-hmm,
days, times, when they told the ECG to curtail power.
And they didn't
manage the load. And the load was not managed, threatening a system collapse.
So folks, this is what you are getting from Ghana Grid Company. They are laying bare the facts regarding the power situation in the country. So really, what is the situation and how do we manage the situation going forward? Let me bring in Dr. Kwame Nadonko. Dr. Kwame Nadonko is a former power minister and, of course, a member of parliament for Pru East in the Bono East region, and he has a lot of knowledge in this industry. Dr. Kwame Nadonko, good afternoon. Welcome to the Pulse.
Good afternoon to you, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Does this GRIDCO, you know, communication to the president come as a surprise to you?
No. I am not surprised by the list. These are exactly some of the things I've been saying, and some of us have been saying for a while now. It is not surprising.
So, when we were told earlier that the situation was as a result of maintenance work being undertaken by some of the power producers, we were virtually being lied to.
Well, I wouldn't say being lied to. ECG was trying to manage a situation that was beyond their control. And unfortunately, in doing that, they were telling us things that they should not be saying.
Mm. So what should be the way forward? Now that we know that the situation, bottom line is that we need to find money to procure fuel and gas to put, you know, into stream the power plants. What would be your suggestion, Dr. Dongo?
Well, the bottom line is that of liquidity. We need to find the money to procure the fuel. In the short term, that is the step one. Then the step two is to get additional generation, either the plants that are down, to get some of them working. And if we do that, there will be sufficient backup. But the bottom line is that we don't have money to buy fuel.
And
that is the bottom line. And so government will have to forgo some other projects in order to fuel the system.
So is it safe to now formally demand that we should be provided with a timetable so we can plan our lives, because clearly the situation is very far from over?
The regulator was extremely truthful when they directed the utilities, especially the distribution companies, especially ECG and NEPCO, to come out with a load management schedule. It is important. At least it gives us predictability. And as you know, predictability is important in running any business. GRIDCO has just told the story as it is. We have known for a while that some of the units of TECO, TAPCO, etc. have been down. And when it comes to a Siemens plant in Tema, that plant should be scrapped. It has outlived its usefulness. So yes, we have a generational problem, but the immediate challenge is not only capacity but fuel. We need to buy heavy fuel oil for the AXA plant if we cannot get enough gas to feed them. We need to buy the fuel oil, which is basically diesel, for the Contema plant. to run all of, to ramp up.
And
so Biko has been truthful, even though this was not meant for public consumption, but that is the best.
So, Doctor, for a layman who probably is of the opinion that because we have a gas company in Ghana, we shouldn't be talking about inadequate supply of gas.
Yes, the capacity of domestic gas is inadequate to feed all our plants. Domestic gas, on a good day, can handle about 70 to 80% of our plants. So we will have to import gas from Nigeria and gas to supplement the domestic production. That has been the situation. And in the absence of gas, we will have to buy either liquid light crude oil or buy heavy fuel oil, or as a last resort, buy diesel for the Contema plant. That has a 220-megawatt capacity.
And then my final question, as somebody who is professional in this field, when you hear Rico say that, we had to disconnect supply, if you like, because ECG was not going according to our plan to curtail power. To what extent are we compromising the plans that we have, if this is what is going on?
You see, on a daily basis, there's a projected load demand and there's a projected generation availability. And therefore, it is the duty of the Systems Control Center, which is manned by Gridco, to balance the two. So when there is more demand than the ability to supply, it is just natural that you will be asked to reduce what you are taking. And then you are giving information, please drop your demand by, say, 200 megawatts. If you don't, Gridco will do it for you. They will take out your feeders. But if you do in a planned way, you can minimize the interruption. There will still be some load shedding, but it will be more orderly. And if you allow Gridco to do it, they wait until the last minute. And if it's going to lead to a system meltdown, they will knock out your feeders for your, especially your biggest supply points.
And we know that this coming Saturday, the Mines and Energy Committee will be meeting players in the power industry. What will be your expectation?
Well, I am only a member of the committee. I'd rather let the leadership of the committee speak on that.
Right. Thank you very much, Dr. Kamal Nonko, member of parliament for Pru East in the Ebonyi East region and a former power minister and also a member of the Mines and Energy Committee. And this weekend, they'll be meeting players in the industry to try and understand what really is going on and to offer some recommendations to government. Let me go on Zoom right now and bring in Nana Amoesi, the 7th Executive Director at the Institute of Energy Security. Nana, so you've heard the position of our power as put out there by Gridco. What would be your initial reaction to what we've been told this afternoon? And if you can kindly unmute for me.
Yes, good afternoon and thanks for having me.
Right.
I think that the statement or the interception of the letter from Gridco is revealing, quite revealing. And it goes to confirm our suspicion. We spoke to Evans some few days ago, and we asked that there must be a thorough audit of the entire power system and that the PRC must look upstream to cover Gridco, to cover the VRA and all that, because we believe that there were things that were amiss and there were some information that were not being made available to us. In fact, since January up to now, who has not broken the silence publicly, has been managing that, and they leave ECG to do all the, PR gimmicks, which goes to a point that you find inconsistency, you find, untruth, and a whole lot of things in their statement. But I think they've come to lay bare what the issues are, and they were right when they mentioned fuel supply constraints, And they're also right when they say that some plants are down. And most of the plants that are down, Elton, it is because they could not undertake plant maintenance. Mm. And so at some point, some machines has to go through forced shutdown. They didn't have money to plan their maintenance. And so today, most of them are doing corrective maintenance, trying to come back on stream. If we are able to resolve the financial challenge in the sector, so we are able to maintain our system, including the plants, the transmission network, and the distribution, we are good to go. If you have enough money to buy fuel for the plants, we are also good to go. Mm. We won't need any curtailment of exports to, Cote d'Ivoire, Benin, Togo, and Burkina Faso. And so the issues are that it's because we have cash flow challenge, we are able to buy fuel, and some plants were forced down. That's why we are experiencing what we are seeing today.
But, you know, Nana, there's been this debate about whether or not Dumso should be declared if there is a regime like that, and for that reason we should be told how to plan our lives accordingly. With what we are hearing from Gridco and the debate around this commentary, is it about time that we are told in plain words what the situation is, and then an attempt to carry the nation along in terms of preparedness and the way to deal with it permanently?
Government does not need to tell us whether we are in Dumso or not. It's an experience of the consumer. I know my light dooms and it's so. Mm. And when it dooms, it's for a extended period of time. And so whether it's Dumso or whatever, it's a personal experience that we know. We don't need to be told. Mm. However, we need to be told how to plan our life. We need to be given...
connection there, you know, creating some challenges for us.
In a time tip, mm-hmm. Did you get me? I lost you a bit.
Yes, okay. Please go on. We had a connection, this, but we can hear you now. Please go on, Nana.
Yeah. So, a timetable is a must-have. And it's not something that, they give to us because they are doing us a favor. We deserve to have a timetable. It's our right. Particularly when most of us are prepaid consumers of the ECG, we need to plan and around this disruption that we are seeing today. If you give me a timetable, I know when to expect power. So I know when to deploy my staff for work. I know when to tell them not to come to work.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Some savings. I know when to bring on board a raw materials to start production. If I have power, I know when to do my ironing and plan my daily life. When I know I don't have power, I know as a father, if I have nothing to do in town, I need to get back home quickly for safety purposes and take care of my family. Mm. And so a timetable is not a luxury. It is a necessity that consumers have to experience.
The presidential directive for the curtailment of export of power to neighboring country, will it help?
It won't be a game changer because the amount of quantum of power that's exported is roughly 250 megawatts since the beginning of the year, average terms. And the deficit that we have today is around 550 megawatts. And so there will still be some deficit if we choose not to export. That would be good for domestic consumers, at least some cushioning. However, there are ramifications. You have a contract, and VRA, you know, make some get some cash flow from this export market. If this curtailment of exports is extended, we may lose that export market to another supply end. So we must be careful. The common sense approach is that get your fuel, right? Get a supply. So at least you can bring online fully Amandi. You can bring online Senate. You can bring online Phase 1 of Asogli. It should give you something around 600 or 500 megawatts. That can really balance our load. But we need reserve. And so quickly we must fix all the power plants that are down and bring them on stream. And so supply of fuel is key at this moment. If government chose that approach and said, look, I'm going to procure liquid fuel to bring the plants back, we won't need the curtailment of this export market at all. So it's not a game changer here.
And my final question, will be, what role should the regulator play now that we know the facts as presented by GRIDCO to government?
The PRC is mandated not only to protect the interests of the utilities, but also that of consumers. It then asks the ECG to provide a timetable. The deadline has elapsed. We expect them, through their own regulation, to crack the whip on ECG. That is the only assurance that we can get from a PRC or a regulator that we know it can bite, not one that gives an instruction and sits and watch. The next thing that the PRC must do is to audit the upstream segments of the power sector, the VRA, GRIDCO, and the ECG itself. It's very important.
Look, I ask because, I mean, it looks like PRC has been on the neck of ECG all this while. Now, ECG may not be the real problem here. Now that GRIDCO has also played into the scheme of things, perhaps they should expand their scope of investigation in terms of asking questions from the power producers.
Exactly the case, Elton. And the ECG brought this on itself. Because the moment they said that we are going to see outages because of 630 transformers overloaded, which can cause trippings of conductors and others, the PRC went directly to the ECG because of that pronouncement. Now that there are further and better particulars, yes, it is right that they look beyond the ECG to also investigate upstream. There'll be more, probably some other things that even the GRIDCO has not been able to mention for one or two reasons. And the other thing, let me put this one right here.
Right.
Whatever export volume that is being halted for domestic consumption, we pray that they direct this quantum of power to the industrial sector, because that is more productive than to be given to residential. Go and see. There are many factories that are down in Tema. And the president went all the way to commission a refinery. Today, the refinery is down because they don't have power, dedicated power. It's quite a challenge to industries. And I don't think that we can afford to see a dip in our own GDP or a dip in jobs as well.
Right, thank you very much, Nana. I'm going to see the 7th, and as we look at the developments that has come, if you are watching us and you have any comments, please share with us on our Facebook X pages the situation that's presented by GRIDCO. The recommendation to government is that buy more fuel, buy more gas. That's the only way we can get out of this current situation with our energy, you know, challenges. This is a pause here on Joy News with me, Elton Rebel. We'll take a short break. When we return, we'll talk about passports.
When things start getting out of control, as it is going, deteriorating, and we don't arrest it, it is going to take about 2 years for somebody to get their passport. As we speak, we have 70,000 there.
70,000
sitting there backlog.
You only cough, never cough, syrup. Class bow, bow, away. Class bow, bow, away. I don't go. Oh, yeah, we tear a good drop. I could call Bessa, let me be a mineral more. Honey and ginger, lake brush and basso. Long pepper and violet. You only cough, never cough, syrup. Class bow, bow, away.
New effective for relief from cough, sore throat, and throat irritation. New Honey Cough. Class Coho Coho Away. Manufactured and distributed by NS Chemist Limited. This advert is FDA approved.
A capenu, eya, a nutrient me too for say, a bibber, oh, tadia, tadia, un san cotonu imperu. Name canfu, SCP, amo, SCP, ewa, tema shy hair. A whole factory casino, isi. And you know, pavement blocks, boss and casancasa, and I did this in them Pierano, Oko Shahira, SCP, Ebemobi. Some person will soon die, now put on good concrete. And never I could toss cement, I could pump walk upon me. Offer SCP, can the concrete, I'm messing the down with quality. Cement one, on the good camera amount. So what am I? A fienya, Dodoa, a flower, bomb, and in Patamon Nara, your office. I was Printers Road, Yali Papaya Restaurant, in the Dimfe Dimu.
For SCP was 0501-672-608. And our toll-free number,
Welcome back to The Pulse here on Joy News with me, Elton Brobe. Now, the passport office is in deep trouble, struggling to meet the volume of applications from qualified Ghanaians. The office lacks adequate and well-functioning processing equipment to deal with the more than 5,000 applications daily. The sad reality is that it will take at least up to a year to get your passport if you put in an application today. We have a deep conversation with the Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister, Kwaku Mprintshiamsapong. We talk about a plan to clear the backlog. But first, let me bring you the numbers behind the stark reality at the passport office. And this is what we've put together so far. So remember, until the 1st of April 2024, passport was costing you 100 Ghana cedis for the 32 page and then 150 Ghana cedis for the 8 pages. Now, on the 1st of April 2024, per the fees and charges approved by Parliament, the Foreign Affairs Ministry announced a 400% increment. So the 100 Ghana cedis for the 32 pages now will cost you 500 Ghana cedis and 644 Ghana cedis for the 48 pages, you know, document. That was before 150 Ghana cedis. And this is the information that we have. Now, the proposal was for 700 Ghana cedis for 32 pages and 800 Ghana cedis for 48 pages. But as we have been told, when the Foreign Affairs Ministry met the Subsidiary Legislative Committee, the suggestion was that they should come down, and that came to 500 Ghana cedis and, of course, 644 for the 32 and 48 pages, respectively. Now, in terms of standard application, it's not 500 Ghana cedis from the initial 100, and then government was paying 400 Ghana cedis for you if you apply for a passport when we're paying 100 Ghana cedis, and that came to 500 Ghana cedis. Now, government says undertaking full cost recovery, so the 400 Ghana cedis that was subsidy has now been taken over, and government says that it's putting everything on the applicant. Instead of 100 Ghana cedis and 400 Ghana cedis government subsidy, it is now full cost recovery at 500 Ghana cedis. And yes, so that is what you have on it. So with the full cost recovery, currently at 500 Ghana City for a passport, the passport office or government makes about 300 Ghana cities as profit, if you like. And that is the information that we have from the passport office. So on a daily basis, per the digitalization process, 5,000 Ghanaians apply for a passport. Now, the passport office, because of the challenges they are facing, they are only able to print 3,000 passports every day. That will leave a deficit of 2,000 every day. So every day there's a backlog of 2,000 passports that are not printed because of their own challenges. That's very soon we'll hear from the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs as he explains that to us. So currently, as we speak, the passport office has a backlog of 70,000 passports. And by the close of work today, I'm sure that number will go to will go beyond 70,000. This is when we had that interview with the Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister. 70,000 backlog that they need to clear, that is the situation. I'm sure by the close of today, that number will go a little higher. And it will take about 9 months to get a biometric registration if you should apply for a passport today. And will take an additional 6 months for the passport office to print that passport and give it to you. So if you should go the way we are going, or we have been going the last few years, it will take you almost 2 years to get a Ghanaian passport if you should go through the normal process at the passport office. And that is unacceptable for a lot of people, including myself. So what is the situation? How is government dealing with this situation at the passport office? Yes, I had a sit-down conversation with the Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister, Kwaku Ampetum Sapon, who tells me how government is hoping to fix the challenge at the passport office.
This is a pause here on Joy News, and this afternoon we are here in the office of the Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Kwaku Ampetum Sapon. Now, the issue has to do more with the recent increment in passport fees and the reaction that came along with it. There's also been reaction from Parliament, the NDC minority. They made it clear the position they've taken on this matter and what they intend doing when Parliament is back in session. But the Minister is here with me here to walk us through the process leading up to the proposal to have the fees increased. And he's going to tell us more about this. Honorable, you're welcome to Joy News.
Thank you very much, Elton, for this opportunity.
And interestingly, I'm just next door to your constituency of Mampon in Asante region. I can virtually walk from my hometown to my hometown of Insuta.
Yes, 3 miles away.
Yeah, just 3 miles away.
In 45 minutes walking, you'll be there.
Right.
Yes.
So it's good to have you on Joy News.
Thank you.
So you took the decision to review the fees for passports. What went into deciding on this increment?
Okay. The decision was actually, thank you for the opportunity to present the case about and around the upward review of the passport fees, and there were others which are consular charges.
Right.
The ministry, led by the Honorable Minister Sherry Ajuoku-Buke, took the decision that the time was ripe for an upward review of certain fees and charges that the ministry wants to charge as passport fees and consular fees, specifically. We should also have the view that the time has come for us to take the bull by the horn and to charge a sustainable and a realistic price commensurate with how much it costs to produce a passport. It costs 400 Ghana cedis to produce one passport.
For the 32 page.
And we all this while have been selling it, let me put it that way, for 100 Ghana cedis.
Meaning it was highly subsidized.
Highly subsidized. No serious business person would do that. You go and buy something for 400 Ghana cedis and come and sell it for 100 Ghana cedis. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. This has been on the drawing board for a very long time. And many ministers have come to pass and they have shied away taking the bull by the horn, taking the tough and hard decision to make sure that we pay the realistic price, the market price for the acquisition of passport, and also to do comparables with what happens within the West African sub-region. For starters, Ghana's passport is the lowest in the whole West Africa region. The second lowest, strangely, is Liberia.
This was before the increment?
Yes, Liberia. And even with the increment, we still remain the lowest. Even with the increment, we still remain the lowest. Because Liberia was charging $40, and currently theirs is under review. Our 500 is coming around the $40 region, right? Now, the supplier of Liberian passport is the same supplier of Ghana passport. So we in Liberia go to the same market to buy the same passport. And then they sell theirs for $40 and we are selling ours for $7 or $8. It doesn't make sense. But like I said, over 10 years, we've stayed with it. Everybody has shied away from it. And we've come to a point where we are more or less being strangulated. Funds or monies that are supposed to use at the main ministry here is being used to subsidize passports.
But why was it so that you would spend 400 Ghana cedis to procure a passport and then sell it to the holder at 100 Ghana cedis?
It's like the noise that
you
is currently
to make it so available to everybody.
Well, the noise that currently is being made. We are selling.
We'll come
it
to that.
We are moving to 500, and there is a bit of noise from some courtesans where it is expected. I mean, as for that, there is no way. Even if we decide to reduce the price, there will be some people who will not, yes, reaction positive or negative. But we had to do it because we thought we got into a place where it was not sustainable for the ministry to move money from running the main ministry to continue subsidizing passports. It wasn't sustainable. We were having serious challenges at the main ministry. We were even thinking of cutting back on the services that we were providing at the main ministry here in order to be able to subsidize passport.
Meaning the budgetary allocation that Parliament approved for the ministry, part of it went into subsidizing passports
exactly
for the holder.
That is what is happening. And the problem too is that we have, because we are paying this 100 Ghana, it has been impossible for us to invest in the acquisition, the production and acquisition of passports. So passport office will lack a lot of equipment. Now we've gone digitalization. So there's a whole range of equipment, whatever that needs to be done. Computers, we can't buy. The capturing machines, we can't buy. The printers, we can't buy. We can't afford. To the extent that, Elton, as we speak right now, if you go and make an application for passport, and you want a booking for your biometrics, you get it in December.
Because we're here to clear the backlog.
Because we don't have
the
capturing machines to be able to capture. So you go in today, you get December. And I can tell you, if you go in next week, it might be next year.
We'll come back to deal whether the increment will help address the backlog. But the 500 Ghana cedis that you are charging presently for the 32. Is it full cost recovery?
It is full cost recovery. The 400 will make us possible to pay for the full cost of it. At least the 100, you need some little profit to be able to use that to reinvest. 400 is covering everything.
Right.
Now you need a little bit of excess to be able to buy certain things, to reinvest it, to improve things to do. Right in the acquisition process. Moreover, in 6 months' time, we'll be introducing what we call chip embedded passport, which is a requirement of an International Civil Aviation Authority, ICAO, based in Canada. ICAO has asked all countries to make sure that they migrate onto the chip embedded passport.
Meaning the passport I'm holding now
is what we call a biometric. It's a biometric
passport. So the biometric might have to undergo some kind of upgrade.
Well, it's going to upgrade. A new one will be introduced in 6 months' time.
You're going to phase out the biometric passport.
We'll phase that one, but it is not going to be immediate. When we bring in the chip embedded, both passports can be used for a period of about a year or even more, right? So still you have the biometric. You can use it until maybe a year or a year and a half or 2 years' time. We are yet to decide on that. when you decide
when you want to put the chip embedded.
Now we have priced this thing in such a way that when we introduce the chip embedded, there will be no need to do an increase. Mm-hmm. It will all stay the same. At least that 100 extra, okay, will be able to take care of the extra cost of introducing the chip embedded. The chip embedded costs more.
Right.
But even if we introduce it, we will still be able to charge the same $500. And to be able to break even and to be able to operate without any or too much challenges or difficulties.
I get you. This new increment, the 500 Ghana Cedi, for example, satisfies you completely.
It does, completely. And at least it brings us nearer to what is happening within the sub-region. Right? The figures, for example, Benin is charging $50.
For a passport.
For a passport.
That's like 600 Ghana Cedi.
Burkina charges $80, which is about $960. That's 60 Ghana cedis.
Right.
Cameroon charges $180. That is about 2,160. Ivory Coast, our next door neighbor, charges $123, which is roughly about 1,500 thereabout. The Gambia charges $50 for a passport. Guinea charges $57. Guinea-Bissau charges $65. Mali, $91. Nigeria, $54. Sierra Leone, $100. Togo, $50. Liberia, $40. Lowest. Ghana, $7 or $8.
But now it has moved to almost $40.
Now we are getting there. So we are getting closer to even the Liberia, with the second lowest. And the Liberia one is currently under review. Liberia is looking to review. So while the lowest is looking to review its passport upwards, we are now doing the catch-up. Right? And the catch-up, there's a bit of a backlog. But I know Ghanaians, at the end of the day, will see reason and wisdom in what we are trying to do. Because the bottom line is, we want to increase or improve service delivery. At the moment, we are not comfortable or happy with the level of service that we are providing. Yes, we have to be very honest about
it. But even as you make us understand that even with the new increment, we are still paying the lowest in the sub-region.
Yes.
The minority, the ranking member on the Foreign Affairs Committee, Samuel Okudjetu Ablagwa, says, looking at the prevailing economic conditions in the country, 500 Ghana cedis appears to him to be on the higher side, even though he does admit that there's a need for an increment. And then when you met the select committee, the recommendation that came forth was that you should stagger it, such that the increment should be on a gradual basis. What is your reaction to this?
Well, Sammy is professionally good at playing to the gallery. He likes playing to the gallery. Why? The last 1 year, I have engaged Sammy about 4 or 5 times on this very matter. I've done extensive engagement before this thing came out. I've engaged Sammy. I have engaged the NDC previous leadership, that is Harold Nedrusu. I met Harold Nedrusu about 2-3 times on this matter. I shared with him all the information.
So the discussions didn't start today?
No. It's been going over a year. The same thing apart with Sammy. The same, I've shared that with him. The current crop of leadership of the NDC, I have had engagements with them that, look, this is where we are. And they've all said it is not sustainable. The figures we have, my brother, no way. This upward review is very, very necessary. We can't continue to stay at where we are. Yes, it is true that we did mention it to the Foreign Affairs Committee, that at a certain point, we'll be introducing or we'll be asking for an upward review. We'll go through the processes. But it is not the Foreign Affairs Committee's responsibility in this particular matter.
Yeah, because
fees and charges. It is not Foreign Affairs Committee. So when Honorable Okudjetu goes on and on, it is not true
that the recommendation was that
it is not true.
There was no such recommendation.
Because it is not coming before the Foreign Affairs Committee.
This was an ally that went to the 21 days maturation period.
No. You see, I'll tell you the process, Elton. When we mooted the idea, it has been on the drawing board, like I said, for the past 10 years, just that ministers and politicians haven't had the balls to actually introduce it. Until my minister decided that the time was up, we were being strangulated, and we need to do something about it. Otherwise, we might have to shut the passport office. Now, we have to make, the law requires that when you want to make changes on your fees and charges, you prepare your memorandum and then you take it to the Ministry of Finance. Ministry of Finance has a unit that will do all its necessary due diligence to make sure that what you are asking for actually is appropriate. Then from there, a joint presentation is then made to Parliament. Then the Speaker will decide which committee. And normally, when it's fees and charges, it is the subsidiary legislation. The subsidiary legislation, as presently constituted, is chaired by Dr. Dominic Ayeni,
a member on the NDC side.
A member on the NDC side and the MP for Boku East. So he went to the committee. The committee invited our officers to come and make our case, bring the background documents, whatever. They can also get people, researchers, consultants to go in and investigate and see if what we have brought is appropriate and justified, or what they have to do, either reduce it, whatever. So that happened. At that committee level, it was a unanimous decision, not one dissenting voice.
When it came to the increment?
When it came to, yes, the discussion on the increment or the review, the whole subsidiary legislation committee of, I think it's 10 MPP, 10 NDC or somewhere, the whole committee unanimously approved it.
Right.
Agreed. It wasn't the decision of the chair. Neither was it only the minority or the majority that decided. The whole membership in attendance on that day agreed that, yes, they have to approve it and recommend it to Parliament for approval. So they agreed and they recommended it and brought it to the floor of Parliament for a debate. When the report came for Parliament for a debate, at the end of the debate, the whole parliamentary session in attendance that day, unanimously, not one dissenting voice, agreed that these fees and charges be implemented.
Right.
So he went through LI, legislative instrument, and delayed for 21 days, and eventually, together with other fees and charges that were in the working,
right,
were approved. So we had no other option, because if we don't implement it, we can be sanctioned.
Right.
So we decided that 1st April, yesterday, will be the implementing date. So that is the process that we went
through. That is gone through.
So people sitting somewhere saying, I did this, I did that, and I'm going to go to Parliament, and then it is hoofing and puffing.
But again,
if he wants to come, I'll meet him on the floor of Parliament.
Right. So, Honorable, beyond the legalities that nobody is faulting you for, his other concern is that this is going to put extra hardship on the Ghanaian. And for that reason, he will make formal approach for the minister and yourself to appear before the committee with a view to review what has become law now. Is this something that you are willing to consider?
Well, if he wants us to come to the committee, we will respect the committee. We will appear before the committee. We will repeat or rehash the reasons behind the request and the approval given by Parliament of the passport fees. That one, yes. But as to whether this little threat, whatever, it is not going to happen, take it from me.
You are not going to review it.
It will not happen. These figures, with the support of majority of Ghanaians, it has come to stay. There's nothing he can do about it. He can make his noise out there. That one, nobody challenges him. If he wants to bring it to the committee, to Parliament, we will meet him on the floor of Parliament. We will discuss it, we will debate it. And at the end of the day, I can bet my last silly he will fall flat on his face.
How does this address the backlog at the passport office?
Right. The reason why we are introducing this, like I said, principally is the fact that we need to invest and improve service delivery. With us, will it be possible for us to start charging these new fees? We will not need the subsidy. We will rather have money to be able to invest.
Right.
To buy the equipment, the machinery, the printers, and whatever other stuff that we need to be able to give the extra, the excellent service that have been our agenda to do. With the cash revenue flow, it will become possible for us to approach the suppliers of this equipment and materials and whatever that we need in our work. So once we get more computers, once we get more laminating machines, once we get more capturing machines, we'll be able to capture more biometrics. And therefore, this 6 months, 7 months, or 8 months appointment days will be reduced and eventually be in a very containable situation. At the moment, it's out of control. Out. Because we don't have the capturing machines.
We have the machine.
We do have some, but it's not enough.
The capacity is very low.
Capacity is very low. And that is what is causing this uncontrollable dates that is happening. Now, if we have money, or if the money starts coming in the next month or two, when the revenue flow is increasing, our cash flow is good, we plan. We have a plan in place. When we approach, like I said, the suppliers, this is our money. Now you see we have money coming in. Give us the machine right now. We are not going to wait till we accumulate. But we say, give us the machines so that we can start improving the service. And then with the revenue flow, we'll be able to meet our financial obligations to you.
But
same applies to when we get to the passport printers. Because right now, passport printing book is taking about 8-10 months to about a year.
Yes, exactly. And,
when things start getting out of control, as it is going, deteriorating, and we don't arrest it, it is going to take about 2 years for somebody to get their passport. Because the capturing of the biometrics alone takes you about 8 months. Then when it comes to the printing itself, because we have challenges with the printer, right? Well, at the moment of digitalization, passport applications in a day is about 5,000, minimum 5,000.
5,000 you print in a day?
5,000, no.
5,000 applications?
Applications coming in.
Across the country?
Across. We are able to print maximum, after stretching ourselves, 3,000.
Out of the 5,000?
So every day,
there's a backlog of 2,000.
A week, 10,000. So 1 month, 40,000. As we speak, we have 70,000 sitting there backlog, because we don't have the printer.
And even as you are charging the new fees, if you want to look at the timeliness of it, it's going to take us months, if not years, to clear the entire
backlog. We have a plan, like I said.
What's the plan?
With the revenue flow, okay, what we are looking at doing in the next couple of days, we intend starting, is we were going to have two teams for both the capturing and the printing. So the first team will do the normal working hours, okay, do the capturing. Then the second team will come in and then start to work to reduce the backlog that is sitting there, okay? And we are also starting a phone call process, okay, call center. That will be calling people who, even though have been given some distant dates, when we call you and ask you, is it possible for you to come on such and such a date for your capturing, and you are able to, then we ask you to come, and then we will do your capture. Through that, we will be bringing down the backlog of the capturing. Now, the same principle we are going to apply with the passport, or the printing. The first squad will come and do the normal printing during the normal working hours. And then the second squad will come in and then do the second batch, be dealing with the backlog of cases that are there. Right. Now, that is using the current system.
The current system.
Now,
we will all then be in a position also to buy new printers. Mm-hmm. And when we bring in the new printers, it means we'll be able to speed up clearing the backlog of printers. Because our current printers will be there, mm-hmm. right? We have some small, small printers. If I take you there and you see it, you say, ah, Ghana, Pani. Printers, where the TC Hana, you are using it to print. Yes, that is what we have. But when we are able to, because we comfortable that we have money coming in, it will be easier to approach the supplier of the manufacturers.
But you should also be mindful of procurement, you know, bottlenecks that you have, that you may face in terms of getting these printers in time to clear the backlog.
Well, all I'm saying is eventually you will get it.
Right.
Okay. As for the timeline, whether you have money now in abundance, you will never go and you pick it off the shelf. It is not off the shelf. You place the order and then they will manufacture it for you. That is, but so the timeline, fine. We play, if, for example, now we know that the cash flow is coming, Ghanaians have accepted it, the 500 is coming in, at least we'll be in a comfortable position to make an order. And when you make the order, you know you are not just paying it there and then. The manufacturer is going to take, tell you, it's going to take maybe 1 month, 2 months, or 3 months to manufacture. Mm-hmm. So you know you have about 2 or 3 months to pull together your resources to go and settle. Mm-hmm. And with the stream of income by way of the payments, right, you will then be able to marshal your resources and be able to pay the supplier mm-hmm. when it's delivery time. Mm-hmm. So we are quite comfortable that if we are able to sustain what we have introduced, it will make it possible for us to buy the equipment and, with what we have put in place, improve the service delivery to Ghanaians. And moreover, you see, we believe that the number of passport acquisition is likely to go down. Reason being that, until the introduction of digitalization and Ghana Card, passport in most cases was the main form of ID card for Ghanaians. Now, with the Ghana Card coming on stream, and the Ghana Card now becoming the number one ID card in everything that you do, there will be no real and serious need for the ordinary Ghanaian to run to go for a passport. You will need it when you are having to travel outside Ghana.
But see, the my understanding is that even for most countries, the Ghana card is accepted as
well. It is accepted when you are traveling from there to Ghana,
right?
Mm-hmm. But when you are traveling from Ghana to those countries,
it will be difficult.
Outside West Africa, you must have a passport because you are going to need a visa, mm-hmm. and the visa will have to be in a passport. Mm-hmm. You can't have visa on the Ghana card. We haven't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. Even those in the advanced economies, the EU countries, they have ID cards. The America has the ID card. Canada has ID card. You cannot use that to travel. Because, yes.
Right. So, even as you deal with the backlog, and the backlog that has existed for so many months, if not years, it has provided opportunity for some other individuals to exploit the system to their own advantage. To the extent that people are paying more than the 500, which Honorable Okojeto
described
as too high. People are paying 2,000, 3,000 just to acquire a passport.
Yes.
So the desire is there.
It is there.
The unfortunate thing has always been that the service is not there for you to access.
That's so very true.
In terms of this guru addition into the acquisition of passport, how are you dealing with it?
Okay. When we get to the position of being able to improve service delivery properly, when we have the equipment, for example, the capturing, because there are bottlenecks, difficulties, and challenges along the way in getting dates for your capturing, right? The long hands of the devil have entered in there between outsiders and insiders,
right?
Guru boys outside and they are inside accomplices.
And these are employees of the passport.
Oh, yeah, employees of the passport offices. They condone and connive and are able to manipulate things because of this shortage. And because there is a market for it. Mm-hmm. Right? Where there is no market, Goro will not happen. There is a market. People are getting 8 months appointments. The person wants his thing in a month. So what will the person do? Okay, a market is therefore created because of the inefficiency and as a result of the underinvestment and the lack of equipment. So Goro boys grow. Okay, now where we are able to have the bookings per what I have just described, and you apply and the booking gives you 2 weeks or whatever, why do you go to a Goro boy for the Goro boy to charge you? Two, if we have printers and we are being able to print booklets, the passport, within the stipulated 21 days, why would you need a Goro person to come in and charge you 1,005, 2,000, and currently 3,000? Why? What for? You don't need it. But if it's going to take you 1 year to get your booklet, you will be looking for ways and means. And the Goro person will also find ways and means, right, in association with his son of the devil inside the passport office, and then do business. So when we do succeed with the increase in fees and are able to buy the equipment and the materials and the whatever, we will be able to contain the situation. We will be able to reduce the activity of Goro boys. Eliminating it completely
will be difficult.
Is difficult. I have to be a realist. Will be difficult. But when you have human beings, there's always the devil out there to tempt us.
Trying to manipulate the system.
Yes.
But for your staff, for people who work under you and those on secondment who work at the passport office, what is your strategy working to deal with these individuals who have taken advantage of the laxity in the system to exploit it to their own advantage? The last time the minister went there, she threatened to transfer some people who had been there for more than the stipulated time.
Not 30, we did. Those who had been there for more than
6 months.
6 months. Later on, she was a bit magnanimous and then extended it to 1 year. They were all transferred, right? The protocol arrangement, the passport office is not only membered by staff of Ministry of Foreign Affairs. In fact, our staff are in the list. All the security agencies have their staff or representatives or whatever there. The protocol arrangement originally was that they will be there for 6 months. And after 6 months, we do changes. Unfortunately, we did not keep to the protocol. And we believe that it also contributed to the Goro business and the Goro activities all over. Because everybody who gets in there sees the passport office as a cash cow.
Right.
And therefore, we were trying to use the devil hands to do all kinds of stuff over there. So when the minister went last August, we moved them. And when we did the moving, the Goro activity actually came down. The price actually came down, no two ways. At least I can vouch for what happened at our party, at our headquarters, at Ridge, right? It came down. We intend continue with it come next August. There'll be
do another transfer.
No, we will do. Now we say we are going to enforce the protocol, and we have also done a staff rationalization over there to make sure that the right number of staff needed are the ones who will be there or be assigned or seconded by the various security agencies.
But when you say the right number, what is that?
Because sometimes what happens is certain numbers are flooded in there.
So you have more number of people working there.
It has been the case. More than necessary. Right?
Wants to go to the passport office.
You want to do some time in motion to make sure that the people that you need, if it is five, it is five, not seven. And the seven are hovering, two extra are hovering around there, and they're doing the in and out, whilst others are working. So they will go out and get the business and bring it in, and then they share. There are all kinds of ways and means that they do the thing there. So we have done our homework. We've come to terms with certain things that we need to do. We're doing the staff rationalization. Come August, we are implementing it to the full. Making sure that the fire service are required to bring two. That's it.
Not more than a
required. Not more than two. Because when you come, there won't be space for you. We don't have space for you. And you won't get access. We don't need you. We will send you back. and you can't force your way in there. It is foreign affairs that has allowed it, mm-hmm. that protocol. Mm-hmm. Nobody can impose it.
Right.
There is no book or legal or administrative structure or whatever, or management structure that says that you have to be there.
Right.
It is for convenience that we think that passport office is a security zone.
Mm.
So if it's a security zone, let's bring on board the other security agencies to help in the work that we do there and to enhance the securityness of that particular office. Mm. So we are looking at all that, and it's all part of the package to try and improve service delivery over there. So we are on course, and we are hoping that Ghanaians will be understanding of what we have ruled out. And it's not a punitive thing that we want to do.
Mm.
It's just that we, excuse me for want of a better word, Ghanaians are having to pay for years of inaction, not increasing, successive, whatever. So I am begging that politics should be taken out of this. And those who want to play politics, it is not going to be helpful. The situation is sometimes, we find ourselves in some of these situations because our politics is so toxic, right?
Mm.
And so adversarial, that anything coming from party A, party B will say, I will oppose it. It's just like this passport fees, I'm telling you. The consultation and engagement I have done in the last 1 year is unprecedented. And the ranking member of the Foreign Affairs who is making the noise that he's making, I am not too surprised that he's making that noise. It's a stock in trade that everything that is coming out, he will want to have a say. He will want to oppose it or say something, and as he tells me, I have to energize my base. I have to energize my base.
Mm.
So for the purposes of energizing his base, he has to be oppose it or say something contrary or be seen to be. It is not progressive.
Just a quick question. For those who are living abroad, Ghanaians who are living abroad, are they also paying the same or...
For each country abroad, each country has got its own fees.
Okay.
Yeah, so it is country specific.
Mm.
And we take into consideration the country's level of development. Some countries are high income countries.
So for example, some UK, are medium. UK and the UK, how much are they
UK,
paying?
UK, well, over the top of my head, honestly, I only want to give figures. Mm. But if I refer to my big document down there,
okay.
I'll be able to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
We have every country the fees and charges for passport and consular services. We have all of them in there. And that is what we will follow. Like I said, we have high income countries, medium income, and then low income countries. So you don't expect a low income country
to pay for
to be paying for the same thing as a high income country. No, that is not the case. We've tried to be fair and equitable in the fees and charges that we've rolled out.
Honorable, thank you very much for the explanation. And today is day one of the implementation of the new
fee. Day two. Today is the first working day. Yes.
And I'm guessing that there's not been any negative reaction to this and everything's going
I guess the way it started yesterday, Elton, let me be fair. Yesterday was a heavy day for me.
Mm.
In fact, for about a period of about 6 hours,
we were just explaining.
I was sitting at one place with explanation, with phone calls from left, right, and center, even from my own party members and my party leadership. It wasn't easy. My minister was also being bombarded left, right, and center. We were there. Now, today, with a lot of work, the explanation, the background information, the talking point that we put out, the justification, I can see that it is sinking in. Even on social media, the information that when people see the comparables, that in the whole West Africa region, Liberia 40, and they are reviewing it upwards, and we are 7. What have we done wrong?
All right.
And when the supplier is the same supplier, Abba, Yana.
Okay. Let's end it here. The Deputy Minister for Foreign Affairs and Member of Parliament for Mampon, Honorable Amprechum Sapon Kweku, Amprechum Sapon. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Olchin.